here. Thank you to the Ritter and to the Free Washington Community Corps for inviting me back for this wonderful series. Thank you as well to the Rosenbaum and the Shul for opening up as well this event and many other programs, lectures, shurim, visiting all that's going on in the synagogue. But I think I'm talking about that. The title of today's shiur, if you could take a look on your first page, is Trolley Problem, the Runaway Train, and Other Triad Decisions in Jewish Law. So I'd like to go through a few of the sources. Essentially, I'd like to discuss two primary questions this morning, two questions of interest. Let's start with source number one. I quote, this is my language, from an article that I published in the journal on the issue of triage, and this is one question that I would like to deal with this morning. An ambulance with three paramedics arrives at the scene of a car accident. There are a total of eight passengers that require serious medical attention. To which of these eight people do the three paramedics tend to first? We're dealing clearly with a situation of limited resources, scarce medical resources. Not everybody can be tended to. What is the series or list of priorities in terms of how to treat an person or individual who is under distress or stress when not all patients can be tended to? Question number one. Question number two. How should an intensive care unit at a hospital with a limited number of beds and equipment decide who is admitted first? Unfortunately, these are questions that are dealt with, that come up daily, monthly, yearly, pharmaceutical agencies, in clinics, in emergency rooms. Decisions of scarce medical resources are always being made. Here, the particular question that I raise is dealing with a bed in intensive care unit when there's only one bed, two beds, we'll get to that. Who is admitted first? What are the decisions? How is that decision made in terms of allocating that particular individual or patient or patients? Question number three. When there are insufficient organs for transplantation to help patients dying of organ failure, what is the appropriate protocol to determine which patient receives the necessary organ first? Of all the three questions, this has probably been written the most about. This is most public. This is discussed most commonly, both in written literature, both in halakhic literature, things that you may have seen in various places. Again, how would we deal with that situation when there are only three organs, there are only four livers, and there are 17 patients, 18 patients? Is a long, long list. Is it simply random, or is there a method to the madness? Source number two, before I would like to go through the halakhic sources, I'd like to share with you one particular source, a secular source, an important source. As I mentioned, much has been written about the topic. How do emergency rooms handle this situation? This is an article providing intensive care, and they dealt with this in a pretty well-known publication. This is in 1997. Things have changed since then, but in a piece entitled Fair Allocation of ICU Resources, the following statement was made. Triage decisions are too morbid and problematic to define, and ranking relative degrees of potential benefit with ambiguity, bias, or subjectivity is extremely difficult and should be treated the same on a first come and first served basis. So that is a very startling, shocking comment. This is not the only article, position paper that has mentioned such a development and such a stance. Many others have as well, and the difficulty and the stress and the emotional distress dealing with such a situation is obviously startling, complicated, and difficult. And here the statement that's made is a first-come, first-served basis. I would like to discuss and go through the sources with you as to whether or not first-come, first-served basis, is there any halakhic protocol or precedent to first-come, first-served basis, standing online? Is there any rights to a person who is first online, second online, third online? That is the first group of questions that I like to deal with. The second group of questions that I like to deal with, and this is the title of the class, or the first title, is the trolley problem. Let's read what exactly the trolley problem is. The trolley problem is a well-known. Let's read the direct quote. This is from the encyclopedia. Reads as follows, source number three. The trolley problem is a thought experiment in ethics, first introduced by Dr. Felipe Foote in 1967. The general flow of the problem is this. Let's read the problem carefully because there will be ramifications in terms of how lots of authorities handle this particular predicament. There is a runaway trolley barreling down the railway tracks. Ahead on the tracks, there are five people tied up and unable to move. The trolley is headed straight for them. So you have the trolley headed in direction A. There are five people tied up, cannot move. If the trolley continues going that direction, these five people will be barreled over. You are standing some distance off the train yard next to a lever. If you pull this lever, the trolley will switch to a different set of tracks. Unfortunately, you notice that there is one person on the sidetrack. You do not have the ability to operate the lever in a way that would cause the trolley to derail without loss of life. So you're essentially a catch-22. If the trolley keeps on going the direction that it's headed, five people will be killed. There is the potential to move the lever and turn the trolley in a different direction, but you can't save all the five lives. Instead, one person's life will be taken by moving the trolley in a different direction. For example, holding the lever in an intermediate position so that the trolley goes between the two sets of tracks, that's an impossibility. Or pulling the lever after the front wheels pass the switch, but before the rear wheels do. Those are two impossibilities. How do we handle this situation? Two options. Do nothing, and the trolley kills the five people on the main track. Just let the course run its way. Those five people will be killed. Second option. Option two, pull the lever, diverting the trolley onto the side track. We will kill one person. Which is the correct choice? This question has been written about heavily. It is a subject of courses in many prestigious universities and colleges, and many debate what the propriety of moving in any of the two directions. I would like to share with you a few sources in terms of how secular research, how this question is handled. As you will see today, this is not just as the encyclopedia defines it as a thought experiment in ethics, but this is unfortunately a very practical situation. This has come up certainly once in the army in Israel, and a second time in a particular accident that occurred in Jerusalem, where the question actually had practical ramifications. The question number four that I brought to bring it a little bit more to life, and this was not a particular practical situation, but a pilot receives a directive to bomb a factory that contains the enemy's store of weapons, thus shortening the war, saving millions of lives. However, 10,000 civilians live next to the factory that will die in the bombing. Question is that appropriate to destroy this particular base, this factory, and as such you will ultimately kill 10,000 civilians, but at the end of the day you're saving and shortening the war very severely. If you take a look in source number 5, and again I'd like to share with you the way some research has dealt with this particular problem. The utilitarian view asserts that it's obligatory to steer to the track with one man on it. That's option A. A utilitarian view typically likes to save as many lives as possible, wants to create the best scenario possible. If you could save five people and kill one, that would seem to be the best idea. That is choice number one. According to simple utilitarianism, such a decision would not only be permissible, but morally speaking, the better option. You could save more people, one versus five. One person should die and five should be saved. An alternative viewpoint is that since moral wrongs are already in place, you're stuck. Moving to another track constitutes a participation in the moral wrong, making one partially responsible for the death when otherwise no one would be responsible. You now have specifically killed an individual who was, by any other circumstance, going to live a long and healthy life. Because you moved in a particular situation, you took somebody's life. Under some interpretations of moral obligation, simply being present in this situation and being able to influence its outcome constitutes an obligation to participate. If this were the case, deciding to do nothing would be considered an immoral act if one values five lives more than one. So clearly the pendulum weighs in different directions here. There are different attitudes in terms of how to deal with the trolley problem. What I'd like to do now is go through a number of sources in Halakha and try to answer both questions. First question, for a series of questions, triage decisions when it comes to hospitals, when it comes to pharmaceuticals, when it comes to organ transplantation, and then question number two, how to deal with the trolley problem. Source number six is the primary source. Anytime we deal with a question of interest, we brought this source in the first class, the first year that we discussed, and we have to review it again, and it has particular import for our question today. The source is number 6, it's a Gemara Bava Metzia, a well-known Talmudic debate between Ben Keturah and Rabbi Akiva. The case is as follows. Again, a hypothetical, but we saw that this is a possibility as well. Shnaim Shahayim Mahalkim Nedarim. Two people are walking along a path. Other sources in the Tanaim understand that it's taking place in the desert, in a desolate area. Ubiat Echad Mehen Kiton Shamayim. One of the individuals who is traveling with his partner, with his friend, with his comrade or colleague, has a barrel, has a pitcher, has a flask of water. If they're both to drink from this flask of water, they will both die. Two friends walking together, the decision has to be made, who's going to drink from that water? If they both drink from that flask of water, they will both cease to live. However, if one of them takes a drink of water, that one individual can make it back to civilization. What is the appropriate thing to do? Both of them drink, both of them die? Or one of them drinks, and one of them will survive, but the other one will be killed and will die? How do we handle this situation? This is subject to machlokes between Ben Keturah and Rabbi Akiva. Darash Ben Keturah, mutav sheyishtu shneihem. Better they both drink. V'yamusu, they will both die. V'alira echon mehem b'misaso shel chaver. One of them should not be liable for seeing the death of his partner. Let's understand that. Ben Keturah understands that if I drink, or if A drinks or B drinks, or one of the two drink, then I have essentially been an accomplice in the death of my colleague. Therefore, better we both drink and let's allow life to take its course. Achibar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva has a different position than we made. V'chai achach l'imach, he understands based upon the pasuk, v'chai achach l'imach, v'chach l'imachar, chayecha kod milchayech avercha. Better that I save my life before I save somebody else's. This is Rabbi Akiva's well-known statement that individual has the opportunity and the obligation to save himself before he saves somebody else. So Rabbi Akiva and Ben Keturah have a fundamental machlokes in this situation. What's better? Two people, one flask of water is only enough water for one individual. Better that they both drink. And if they're going to both drink, they're both going to die. Or better, Rabbi Akiva said that he should hold on to the water and allow his friend to perish. Now, if you read the Gemara carefully, the Gemara explicitly states, "Ubiat echad mehen kiton shamayim." That's the second line. One of them is actually grasping, hugging, holding on to the flask of water. Now, if one of them is holding on to the flask of water, then Rabbi Akiva and Ben Keturah are arguing, what does that one person who has the flask of water have to do? Our situation that I brought to your attention, when it comes to allocation of scarce resources and the like, is not when one person is holding on to the resource, but it's what's referred to in literature as third-party life saving. When there's a third party who has to make the decision between two individuals. That's not the case our Gemara is dealing with. Our Gemara is dealing with when one individual is drowning. He has a life vest. There's another friend. Does he have to give up his life vest to give it to his friend, or should he hold on to that life vest, save himself, and the other person will drown? So in this case, in the life vest situation, that's a parallel to our Gemara, because Rabbi Akiva would say, you have the life vest, you should save your life. And Keturah would argue, maybe cut the life vest in half, and each of you should try to save yourselves as best as you can. So if it's two people drowning and one has a life vest, that Gemara might indeed be a parallel to our Gemara. But if third party comes along and he's waving that he has one orange life vest, and he sees two people drowning, that the Gemara does not necessarily give us the opportunity to understand what to do. That difficulty is raised in source number 7 by the Chiddushi Arim. The Chiddushi Arim was the first Gerer Rebbe, and in his novel on Shas, he raises this difficulty that the Gemara does not seem to be an applicable source as to how to deal with third-party life-saving. You take a look about halfway down that column in source number 7, the third-to-last word in the middle section. says, Mayasa Shlishi B'mayim. What should the third party do when he only has one flask of water? He sees two people starving, dehydrating in the desert. Who should he give it to? How does he make that decision? Reuven, Shimon, Sarah, Leah, what's he going to do? So the Chiddush Erim understands that this Gemara cannot serve as a source for a third party life saving, and he explains logically why so. The Kanu, he says, Lo Sheyach Divrei Bar Kadha. The words of Rav Kadha are not appropriate. Mutav Shishtu Shnehem Vahira Becha B'Misashal Shel Chaver. What is the logic? What's the svara of Bar Kadha? He understands the Benzatura. He understands that better for one not to see, not to be an accomplice of the death of somebody else. However, here, says the Chiddush Erim, that's not true. Because if I'm going to give that flask of water to one person, they'll both die. So typically, Bar Kadha Ben Petur will say, if I give that flask of water to one individual, then I'm seeing and I'm being an accomplice to the death of two people. Here, says Ben Petur, that's not the case, because both of them are going to die. Says the Chiddush Erim, we'll read his language inside. The Kamal Shaykh Ibn Ben Petur, Mutab Shish Kishneya. Hakan, in this situation, a third party life saving situation, even if both of them will drink. That means Reuben comes and gives it to Shimon and the lady, both of them are going to die. So he's an accomplice in two deaths. Therefore, according to Ben Batura, it might be very appropriate to give it to one person. Ben Batura's logic that if you're to give it to one of them, you're being an accomplice in the second person's death, does not apply in the third party life saving situation, because if I'm going to give it to both of them, if I'm going to give it to one of them, they're both going to die. The same Rabbi Akiva.
Both of them are both going to die.
Yes.
You're going to give it to one of them.
That's correct. That's what he says. Give it to one of them, but not to both. Correct. The same Rabbi Akiva, Yishgan King Sabi. What about according to Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva says, Chayah HaKol, we give it to one person. Gam Kate Safik, the Kamlo Shaykh Lomar Hayeva Kogel Achaye Chavero. I can't say the logic that my life comes before somebody else's life. The Hawkwing Circle Lane. I don't need the water. I'm a third party. I came from civilization. I just drank 2 gallons of water. I don't need the water. Rabbi Kiva says my life comes before your life. But my life is in good situation now. I don't need to drink this water. My Yasab is there. So he says, the Chiddush Erim concludes in this situation, third party life saving, place the water down and run away. However, that doesn't help our situation. He says, let's say they're both living in a closed room. Each of them are living in a closed, secure room. He's forced to give it to one of them. What will be in that situation? It's exactly our case. When you only have one liver, one brain that is able to be transplanted, that is able to be given to a patient, and there are two patients, how do you make the decision? How is the decision arrived at in terms of who you give it to? The Chiddush Erim leaves this question unresolved. He does not feel that source number 6, the Gemara Bava Metzia, is an appropriate source to deduce third-party life-saving. In source number 8, the Chazanish argues on the Chiddush Erim, that the second paragraph, he understands that source number 6 is the source that one can glean third-party life-saving situations from. And he explains that according to Rabbi Akiva, even though it's not my life that's being saved, nonetheless, when I have the opportunity to decide whose life will be saved, ultimately it's as if I'm saving a life. When I save somebody else's life, it's as if I save my life. Therefore, the Chazon Ish determines that if I can wholeheartedly save another individual, I should make that decision. Chayech HaKol does not just mean my life, but it also means that I have the decision to decide whose life to save. Says the Chazon Ish that that's also an appropriate form of Chayech HaKol. Now, the Chazanish does not say, is whose life do you save? Whose life do you choose between? Sarah or Leah, Rachel or Rivka, whose life are you going to save? But he does think that Chayech HaKol does not only apply to the individual who's holding on to the life vest, but it also could apply to deciding whose life to save. Chazanish continues, and according to Ben Petura, he explains, that also Ben Petura would have a position here as well. That if Ben Petura understood that you have to give the flask of water to one person, So according to Ben Petura, what would emerge is that that one person would have to split it with another two people. Because according to Ben Petura, you always have to go back and split it between two people. So the Chazon Ish says it doesn't help you, according to Ben Petura, to give it to one person. Once you give it to one person, that one person has to split it between two people as well. So according to the Chazon Ish, he understands that according to Ben Petura, who is Rabbi Akiva's opponent in this particular case, you would give it indeed to two people. So according to the Chazon Ish, you do emerge with a source in terms of third party life savings, but if you take a look at the end of source number 8, you will know about 5 lines from the bottom, he refers to Rabbi Akiva's position, and he says, you're forced, you're responsible to give it to one individual. Better to save one person's life wholeheartedly and completely than to save two people for a shorter amount of time. If you're to give it to both of them, they'll both live for another day or two. If you give it to one person, he'll continue living longer. It's your responsibility, according to the verse of Chayacha Kolvin, that you have to save somebody's life to make sure his life will be elongated. However, he says, the Chazon Ish already hints that there is a way to determine who to decide between, and that's a reference in source number 9. This is a Mishnah in the Seches Horios. You give one an Aleph. The Gemara actually has a list of priorities. The Gemara has a list of priorities in terms of who comes before who in a variety of situations. We're all aware, in Shul, for example, Kohen comes before Our Lady. A lady becomes before Yisrael. So the Gemara goes through a series of lists in terms of who comes before who. And the Gemara seems, or Mishnah seems, to be very exacting and articulate in terms of who comes before who. And if indeed things are so simple the way the Mishnah seems to make it in the Seches Horios, what would come out is a very clear picture of what to do. However, it's not so clear, as we'll see in a moment. The Mishnah reads as follows. Ha'ish kodem l'isha l'hachios l'hashim aveda. A man should be saved prior to a woman, and a man's lost object, if you're not sure whose object is lost, and there's only the opportunity to return one, a man's object should be returned before a woman's. Ha'isha kodem l'isha l'hachios l'hotziyam l'beis ha'shevi. A woman, however, has precedence when it comes to clothing her. A woman who is in a situation of poverty, and a man who is in a situation of poverty, there's only enough resources to take care of one of them in a kupat staka, in a public charity, when there's only enough money to take care of particular amounts of people, these questions often come up. The Gemara understands that a woman precedes a man in that case. Ulhotzin beis hashevi, if two people are captives, who do you decide to say first, a man or a woman? The Gemara and the Mishnah explain that a woman. The Gemara continues and explains a Kohen becomes before a Levi becomes before Yisrael, Yisrael comes before a Manzah. This list is very, very clear, is very exacting, and seems to tell us what exactly one should do. Now, why is this list not absolute? And why is it not as scientific as it seems? If you read the Gemara and the Mishnah carefully, the indication that you get from the Mishnah is when we're talking about an exactly parallel situation. Now, the case that might be exact, and this is the Beis Yosef and Yosef Kara, there are both aspects in Shulchan Aruch, if two people are drowning and all things are even, one person is able to survive. And these are actual cases that are documented in halachic sources. There's a student of the Grub who was arriving from, who was immigrating, making aliyah to Israel, and in a sea storm was drowning with his children, and the question arose. He was miraculously saved. He was holding on to his son and to his daughter, and the question that he develops and writes about after is, who should he save? He can only save his son or his daughter. It's a startling and a frightening and an emotionally draining case. But this is what the Mishnah is talking about. So when all things are equal, so this Mishnah can be a source in terms of what to do. But not always are all things equal. It doesn't always come out that all the facts are exactly the same. Again, if two people are drowning, that could be fine, that you'll be able to use this source as a factual case to understand what to do. But not all the time is this exactly as it seems. Other Achronim also point out that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't exactly bring this case. The Shulchan Aruch brings this Mishnah when it comes to stocking distribution. It doesn't bring this order on a series of priorities when it comes to halachas of pikuach nefesh, how to save somebody's life. That's also a question in terms of halachic authority. Is tzedakah distribution equivalent to saving somebody's life? And therefore, in the same way it's true that a woman becomes before a man when it comes to tzedakah distribution, so too would be true when it comes to saving one's life? Or no, does the Mishnah seem to say that a man comes before a woman when it comes to life saving, as opposed to a woman? So there are particular difficulties in halachic authorities how you do classify this case. But it does seem to be that in when all things are equal, in a vacuum, we would follow this mission. We turn to source number 10. I will begin to explain to you why the Mishnah that I just read is not an absolute. The Prima Gadim, in source number 10, and this is right in Hilchos Shabbos, also debates two difficulties in how to decide between a particular situation. This is on the third line. Mikom Bakom. Somebody who is in critical condition, according to the analysis of physicians. Vizeh safek, and another individual is in a particular situation where it's questionable as to what the length of time that this person has to live. There's no way that there are enough resources to take care of both of these individuals. Who is tended to first? You tend to the person who is certainly ill and who is in a much, much more advanced stage, or do you take care of the person who is suffic? We're not sure how bad his situation is. So the Prima Donna rules, Havadai Doche HaSafik. The person who is in critical condition, the person who has, that's the individual who should be tended to immediately prior to the suffic. So this source, in my opinion, reveals that the case in source number 9, the Mishnah in source number 9, is not absolute. Because there are other situations that do come into the fray that you have to deal with. When there are two people who are sick, there are other aspects that have to be dealt with. It's not just two equivalent situations. You have to take other pieces into the picture or into the puzzle. Not everything is always equivalent. And in source number 11 and 12 are two contemporary responsa, one of Rav Moshe Feinstein and one of Rabbi Woldenberg, who describe practical scenarios of triage situations where they do not use and they do not refer to the Mishnah in source number 9. And I would like to share with those two situations. Source number 11 is a group of about 10 responses that Moshe sent to two physicians, two young physicians who were beginning involvement in emergency room work. Sent to Moshe Feinstein about 10 very, very heavy questions, life and death situations. And one of the questions, and this is in one response that he answers about 12 to 13 questions, and one of the questions that was brought to his attention is regarding a situation where two patients are admitted to the hospital. Both seem to need the emergency room. There's only one bed in the emergency room left. In that situation, the two doctors describe that one patient is critical, certainly needs the attention of the emergency room and of the supplies that the emergency room has to offer. There's no question about it. That patient is due for an emergency room, deserves to be placed and to be given a bed in the emergency room, but there's one caveat. This patient does not seem like he has long-term chance of survival. The other patient, it's a suffix. We're not sure whether he needs an emergency room or not. He will certainly benefit from the emergency room, but he doesn't need the emergency room as much as the first person. The caveat with this individual is that we are certain that if he takes advantage of the resources in the emergency room, he will be able to survive. Who do you deal with first? Who do you give precedence to? The individual who is in critical condition certainly needs the emergency room, but does not have a long-term chance of survival, or do you give it to person number B, who certainly does not need it as much, but certainly if he's given the services of the emergency room, will have a very strong sense of survival. So clearly, the Moshe does not refer to the order of priorities listed in the Mishnah. Those seemingly are not applicable here. If one is a Kohen and one is a Levi, or if one is a Levi and one is Yisrael, or one is an Ish and one is an Isha, that Mishnah is not going to help us here, because when it comes to life-saving, the question as who has a better chance of survival is going to trump the series of priorities. That's essentially what Moshe says in two different Jews. And here Moshe says as follows. We'll read some of his language inside, and let's see how Moshe, right to Zichron Lebracha, will posit in the situation I brought to your attention. Udvar Shnei Chol regarding two sick individuals. Echad Shalafi Utena Deharof Muvat Lifu Lachai Yesha. One of them can only survive a short amount of time. Chayesha is a term in halakha that refers to, according to some, 6 months, others 12 months, some under 6 months. But Chayesha means that his life expectancy is short. Mamash Eshelhem, they could only do so much for him. Ulefa'amim, and at times, Hurak Vasalikim and Ayesurim. There's only at times that they are able to take care of his pain or his difficulty. Avotzarech tipul nimrat. Tipul nimrat means emergency room services, so he certainly needs emergency room services, but his chance of survival is only chaye shah, is only short term. Hasheni, the second individual, the fiha uta shalahem, according to the diagnosis of the physicians in the emergency room, bichol nimrat. Also, they can certainly heal him. About ein yadu lahem yitzarech latipul nimrat. They're not sure if he needs the services of the emergency room. Shosem bebeis achol be'achidu latipul nimrat. There's only one bed in the emergency room. Who should be placed in the emergency room first? When they come at the same time. Moshe, the next sentence begins to explain. It seems to me, if they both come at the same time, before they put one of the patients in the emergency room. Now this we're not going to get involved in today, but if a patient is placed in the emergency room, there are other questions that the doctor said, can he take that person off of a respirator? Can he take that patient out of the life support and give it to another person who certainly needs the life support, where person A is not going to survive on the life support? So that Moshe is unequivocal about. That's prohibited because he considers that to be murder. Once an individual is on a respirator or on life support, to take him off to save somebody else's life, that he says is inappropriate. So if they both come at the same time and both of them need the same services at this point, then Moshe, according to his opinion, Tzarech lahachnis betchila es mishu adas harofim hanim tzarim sham yicholim l'rachmosa. You have to give it to the patient who is more clear that he can survive. You give it to the individual who is able to be taken care of long term. And a few sentences later, he says the reasoning is simple. Hatan Pashut, we skipped down by four lines. Divadai chaye harolim hisvapi. Certainly the life of the individual who can certainly be healed. This person will be able to continue living after he is able to be on the emergency room services. Certainly that patient who can be healed long term has precedence over the other patients, because that person will be able to live a long life as opposed to the other individual who will not make it long term. Rav Moshe's statement is very clear, and Rav Moshe responded to those two physicians in the emergency room that is what they should do. The life support of choice, or the bed in the emergency room, should be given to the individual who has a long-term chance of survival, and not the person who has a short-term chance of survival, even if that person is a Talmud Chacham, if that person is a Kohen or a Levi, if that person is a Yisrael, or if that person was even a Mamzer or a Nassim, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. That list of priorities does not make a difference, because that list only makes sense when all things are equal. Source number 12 was a question that was posed to Rabbi Sternbach. Rabbi Sternbach is the author of Responsa Shelos V'Tshuvos Tshuvos V'Hanhagos. He was a Rav in South Africa for many years. And the question that was brought to his attention was by one individual who was somebody who davened in his shul, who was the head of an emergency room in South Africa. And he asked Rabbi Sternbach, what is the situation with the protocol that is given in our hospital? His hospital, this physician, and there was a certain protocol in this place, in this particular hospital in South Africa, and he asked whether or not as to the halakhic propriety of this policy. Rav Sternbach was unable, or he didn't feel comfortable answering the question. He later sent this question to three giant halakhic authorities in Yerushalayim. One of them was the Tzitz Eliezer. So Tzitz Eliezer responded to Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shmuel reported back to this emergency room doctor. And the situation that the doctor explains as follows. A particular emergency room in South Africa had a policy that an individual who came into the emergency room and needed life support, needed a respirator, but they understood that there was not a long-term chance for him to survive. Now, this particular hospital, it was in the 80s that this question was brought to the attention, only had one life support system. So the policy in the hospital was not to give it to the individual, because based upon the statistics of this hospital in South Africa, there would be people coming in daily who needed life support. So if you would put the patient who was not likely to survive long-term on life support, you were risking the chance of somebody else coming in who would need it and would be able to survive. So the policy of this hospital in South Africa was only to give it to an individual who was certain that they would be able to take advantage of the life support, even though somebody came in before the individual who really needed it also, but because that person did not have a long-term chance of survival, it was only a chayishah situation, the hospital policy was to skip that person on the account of somebody else coming in. Now, this raises a number of questions. One of the questions that it raises that we described till now should be, is it first come, first serve? So this hospital did not follow the first come, first serve policy. And the question that this doctor asked of Shturmach is whether or not that was appropriate or not. Now, he points to a chazanish. The chazanish has a rule that even though two people aren't coming at the same time, but if it's as if two people are coming at the same time, it's called the same time. Based on a tshuva of Achiezer, Feinbold, and Kavinsky, who explains that even though the truth is somebody could come momentarily, maybe you won't come for 5 minutes, maybe you won't come for 10, 15, or even for a day or two, that's considered as if it's coming at the same time because statistics tell us, this is what the physicians report, this is what the data that was given in this hospital in South Africa, that so many patients were coming regularly that it's as if they were coming at the same time. So the first thing that Tzitz Eliezer explains in the rules is that it's as if they're coming at the same time. Now, is this an appropriate policy or not? So if you take a look in source number 12, the Tzitz Eliezer responds, the Sikumi Kol Hamur, based upon this is the end of his very long, the 10, 12 page response, he says, nearly la halakha, it seems to me, according to the halakha, ki yafehi hatakana shetikna ha'anelas beskolim de Johannesburg. The rule and the position that this hospital in Johannesburg had, he felt is appropriate, according to halakha, shelo lehishtabish b'mechona tachaya ha'yichida, not to use the one sole respirator life support system that was in their shusim, that was in their possession. It was only given to an individual who can be saved long term. Says Rabbi Wolfenberg, and Wolfenberg actually served later as the chief rabbinic advisor, halakhic authority for Shai Tzedek Medical Hospital in Israel, and he very often ruled according to this, and Shai Tzedek unfortunately also sometimes was limited in terms of how much life support they had, and Rabbi Wolfenberg rules that it's appropriate to save it for that one patient, even though somebody comes beforehand. Chaos, and he explains, if we're supposed to give it to the first person that comes in and they only live short term, and then we'll pass, he's giving up the opportunity to give it to the other individual who can be saved long term. Once the person who only has a short-term life expectancy is placed and connected to the life support system long-term, says Rabbi Wolfenberg, like Rabbi Feinstein, that you can't disconnect and give it to somebody else. Therefore, and he continues and goes on and explains for the next few paragraphs, next few columns, that the application of the appropriation rather for the individual to who can be saved long term is an appropriate rule. So from these two sources and from all the sources that I just brought,
you do see very clearly that the Mishnah in Horios, which was questionable as to whether or not it can be used in terms of the list in series of priorities, you see both the Moshe Feinstein and Tzitzit Eliezer don't really recognize. And that's because there are other factors that really trump that list. Again, we're not taking away from the list. If all things are equal, then we would go to the list. Typically, others explain that in a paramedics case, like I described earlier, when there are only three paramedics to take care of eight people, there are halachic authorities that say that that's not called the same time. Whoever you could get to first, that's who you have to deal with. If you have to get to a car, if you have to get to a situation where there's limited amount of time, whoever you bump into first is appropriate to say, because they're not called equal. If you're running at all the patients at the same time and you see somebody first, deal with that person first. That is first come, first serve. It's a very well known psak. Moshe Feinstein, it's not in his published Shuvas, but it's quoted by his students, and it's in some written journals of Moshe's Talmidim, that when the penicillin vaccine became available in Israel, so then the chief rabbi, Rabbi Herzog, asked Moshe Feinstein, there are only a limited amount of penicillin vaccinations that were available to give to the citizens of Israel, who should be given to it first? And Moshe, in that situation, explained that you give it to the first people who come to you. Whoever is coming online first, those are the people who you can give it to. Now, they didn't say, come away, lady Israel, they didn't say, Isha, Isha. Ramosha understood in this situation that it's not that all things are being considered equal. There is the opportunity for one person to come before, one person to come next. He didn't deal with age factors, he didn't deal with health issues, but that was the position that Ramosha gave to Rabbi Herzog, who implemented that rule, and when it came to that vaccination, whoever came first was able to be serviced too. So in terms of dealing with a triage situation, a third-party life-saving situation, so the source number two, in terms of priority, sometimes is dealt with, again, if all cases are equal. If not all situations are equal, we go back to what the Prima Gadim in source number 10, the Yerush Moshe and Tzitz Eliezer in source number 11 and 12 say that there are other factors to take into account, and that has applications, again, to paramedic situations, to organ transplantation situations, as well as to other life-saving situations that have to be dealt with. And seemingly the ruach, the feeling, the spirit amongst the poskim is we try to save the person or the people who have a greater chance of long-term survival. That seems to be the way to deal with the first group of questions. The second situation that I would like to bring to you. Everything is equal. You go back to the Mishnah. The Kohen comes for a lady, lady comes for Yisrael. You go back to that situation. But again, it doesn't always come up. If it would, then you go back to that situation. The second series of questions that I like to deal with is also questions of triage, but unfortunately it's the opposite situation. Till now we were dealing with saving somebody's life. When I have the opportunity, a third party has the opportunity to save person A or person B, so I have the choice to decide who can I save. The difficulty that we raised in the trolley problem is that now I'm forced, really, to take somebody's life. I'm not deciding whose life to save when two people are drowning, but I now have to make a situational decision as to whose life to take. Is it going to be the five people that the trolley is headed toward, or is it going to be to turn the trolley and to bump it into the one person who's seemingly okay? Sources 13, 14, and 15 are very clear. We've seen some of these, at least one of them the last time we met, that halacha does not permit taking somebody's life in order to take somebody else's life. Source number 13 deals with a question that was brought to Rav. Mari Duroy was a Roman leader, a chieftain in a particular town, and he demanded that Reuven kill Shimon, and if Reuven doesn't kill Shimon, so he will kill Reuven himself.
He's taking someone else.
Taking somebody else. That's right. So the question is he permitted, was this individual permitted to kill somebody else in order to save his life? So Rava told and responded to this individual who presented this practical situation, which was a very real situation in Talmudic times under Roman rule, that he was not permitted to take somebody else's life in order to save himself. And that's based upon the concept that he postulates, Mi'yemar d'dama d'idach sumakfei d'ilma d'ama d'ahavu gavra sumakfei. Who says that your blood is redder than somebody else's? You don't have the right to decide that your life should be spared and the other should be taken. We don't know whose life is more valuable. Now, when it comes to deciding about taking somebody's life, that's the decision that we make very clearly. You can't be a make decisions in terms of who to kill. When it comes to saving somebody's life, which we described in source number 9, then there is a series of priorities. A kohen comes before a lady becomes before herself, because if I could save somebody, so I have to make a choice who to save. Then there's a set of priorities is existence. When it comes to taking somebody's life, killing somebody, hurting somebody, murdering somebody, then we don't make that distinction between Kohen before Levi, Levi before Yisrael. So it's very clear in source number 13 that one is not permitted to take somebody else's life in order to save somebody else. Source number 14 reiterates that. And the Mishnah teaches us in the Seches Trumos, it's in the Yerushalmi, Noshim she'amru lahem, women who are told by a group of heathens, Goyim, Tsunubanu achas mikem minetama, give us, a group of 400 women are approached by a devious and evil doers, give us one of your women, minetama, and we will defile her. V'imlav harion mitaimen kulchem. If we don't hand over one of the women in this group, we will defile you all. What do you do? The Gemara rules, kulchem yitamu, all the women should be defiled. And one is prohibited from handing over any Jewess, and certainly any Jew in that situation as well. So again, like source number 13, source number 14 says that to deliberately hand somebody over for to be defiled or to be killed is inappropriate. That's not something that one is permitted to do. You cannot wholeheartedly hand over somebody to be killed. There could be an exception to the rule, and that's found in source number 15. If that individual has already been pinpointed by the government, we're killing him. There's a story in the Navi regarding Sheva ben Bichri, who was already deemed to be killed. So if he was already pointed to be killed, then maybe there is the opportunity for him to go for everybody else. But certainly to hand somebody over deliberately, that's prohibited. The Ramban Shulchan Aruch Moshe Ismas Paskins exactly like sources number 13 and 14, that one is prohibited to hand over somebody else, both when it comes to any prohibited avera of the big three, through the Rav Shlichus Tamid Vanzara, and certainly when it comes to handing somebody over to be killed in order to save others, that is prohibited. I think I mentioned last time, in the live response that came out of the Holocaust, the Germans, Yimach Shimon Mizrachov, in their wickedness and in their horror and their terrible activities, very often continued this theme that the Romans did, setting up groups of Jews against each other. They would pick out one person and say, you be killed or hand over somebody else. And this question is often written about, unfortunately, it's documented tens of times by Jews that came out after the Holocaust in terms of how to handle that situation. The position of the Ramban is very clear, it's prohibited. The question that we bring to your attention now is the trolley problem. When I now have the opportunity to go or take the trolley in two different directions, so what should I do? It would seem, according to sources 13, 14, and 15, to put the trolley on the runway or put it on the tracks where it's going to kill somebody deliberately would seem to be relatively similar to the case in source number 14, which is referred to as Tnu, handing over that person to death. That would seem to be exactly what you're doing. If the trolley's headed in one direction, if it just stays in one direction, you could take the course of action will happen by itself. But if you're to turn the lever to move the trolley in a different direction, so you're seemingly handing over somebody to their death sentence. So at first glance, these two sources would seem to indicate that one should let the trolley take its course, or the runaway train should allow it to go according to its path. You take a look on the last page of source number 16. The Chazon Ish, in Chazon Yishayim Karelis, raises the trolley problem. And this is in his essays regarding life and death situations. He asks exactly the question that Felipe Foot raised. He says as follows, and I'm going to read every word here inside because the Chazon Ish wrote very, very meticulously, and understanding how he understood the problem will be helpful in terms of how to analyze and to answer this particular situation. He writes as follows in source number 16, Yesh Lain Be'echa, Romech Chetz Holech L'Harav Be'Lashem Rabbi. somebody sees an arrow that's headed in a particular situation that's headed to kill many people. Now, if you want, you could substitute for a chetz, for an arrow, a hand grenade, and this is the situation that actually occurred in Israel once, when the hand grenade was headed toward an army base in one direction, there was enough time to steer the grenade in another direction, and the question was, if the grenade is going in one direction, 16, 17, 18, 20 people will be killed. If you push in the other direction, there's an innocent bystander who would be safe, but if you push in that direction, he will be killed, thereby killing him, but saving the other 16 people. What do you do? Says the Chazon Ish, I can, and there is enough time to move it to side number two, and I'll only kill one person in that instance. Ve'ilu shebetzad zayin yatzulu, but the people in the other direction will be saved. Ve'lo yasu, if I don't move the grenade, or if I don't hand, or if I don't push off the chetz, the arrow from direction A, yaharu haravim, ve'achamisha b'chayim, everybody will be killed, and one person will be saved. So the setup of the situation is similar to source number 3 or 4 that we brought from Felipe Foot in her trolley problem. And here, the Chazon Ish takes us in a different direction than we ordinarily would have thought. And he writes, V'efshar delo dami lemosim echad lahariga. We thought that a priori, this case of Felipe Foot was similar to handing off somebody to their death. Just like it's inappropriate, prohibited, to hand off one woman to be defiled, and instead they should all be defiled, that's what the Gemara posits, just like the case of Rava, that you can't hand over somebody else to be killed in turn to save my life. The Chazon Ish says that it's not a similar irony. And he explains why. The Asher Dulo Dami the Moshin Echel Ariga, the Hasam Hamasira Hitu Ulahach Zaris. When I transfer, when I hand over that person, that transfer of the individual, that is the pula achzaris. That means that is the grotesque or the inappropriate behavior to hand over somebody to death. Shel haridas nefesh. Now I have actively transmitted somebody to be killed. Uvi pula zel leka hatzalas acherim. And when that person is being transmitted or is being transferred to their death by being cast off to the heathens, so in that situation, there's no hatzalah. Nobody's life is being saved, but I'm merely killing that person. The teva shel hapeula el hamikre v'ram achshav hatzalah la'acher. It happens to be that as a byproduct of handing over person A, other people will be saved. That's only a byproduct. Gam hatzalah sa'acherim kashura b'mashem mosim ha'migas nefesh. Nefesh in Israel, but certainly the fact that others are being saved, they're being saved as a result of person A being killed. So the way the Chazon Ish understands the case of tmiut and handing over somebody's life explains the Chazon Ish that essentially what you're doing is you're killing that person. You're giving that person's life up, and as a byproduct, somebody's being saved. But you are actually handing off somebody to be killed. Chazon Ish says in the case of the hand grenade and in the case of the arrow that's headed in a different direction, he analyzes that it's different. This is the Chazon Ish's way to analyze the case of the flying hand grenade or of the flying arrow. It's not called a Maisa Hariga, but it's called a Maisa Hatzalah. I'm not killing person one, but I'm saving five people. So the way that Chazon Ish pronounces it is that it's different than the case where I'm handing over the women to be defiled, or I'm handing over one person to be killed. When I'm handing over that person, he's being killed, and as a byproduct later, happens to be that people are being saved. But while that person is being handed over, nobody's being saved at that moment. But when I move the grenade from point A to point B, at that moment, I'm not killing somebody, I'm saving those five people. I'm pushing it aside because my first priority is to save those people as opposed to kill the people. Says the Chazon Ish, that is the fundamentally an act of saving others' lives. It's not connected to killing person one on track B. Akshav, the mikra happens to be nitzav of tzarach and nefesh b'Yisrael. It happens to be that there's a lone Jew that is on track B. Achrei shebetzad them, yiharbu nefashos rabbos. And because on track A, many people will be killed. Ubetzad acher, ubetzad echer, efshav yeshlanu lehishtadu l'mayit habetet Yisrael b'chomayim. Efshav says the Chazon Ish, maybe it's better in this situation to save the many as opposed to killing the few. That's the Chazon Ish's way of understanding. So it comes out of the Chazon Ish, doesn't exactly answer the question, because you look at the end of the paragraph, he says, Tzarachin, he's not sure exactly how to resolve the difficulty, but the Chazon Ish does raise a fascinating point. What is the fundamental act that you're doing? Is it a saving tool that you're doing, or is it a killing activity that you're doing? Are you saving five people, or are you killing one person? So as opposed to the other cases where you're handing over somebody's life to be taken, and later on others will be saved, that's a whole different construct that we're creating in the case of the trolley problem, because initially, really, we're causing an act of life-saving. So because you're saving that person, as a byproduct, somebody else's life will be taken, but fundamentally, it's an act of life-saving. That's the Chazon Ish explained in source number 16. In source number 17, we'll finish with two sources that deal head-on with this question. And this is the Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenberg, brings our attention to the suffix of the Chazon Ish. And he explains that the Chazon Ish, in the second paragraph where he writes, that the theoretical application of the Chazon Ish is not just theoretical, but it also has applications. He explains to somebody who's driving. And when you're driving, you're headed, for whatever reason, your brakes are out, and at that moment, you're headed toward five, six people who are passing or walking across the street. If you could quickly maneuver the car in a different direction, you will kill one individual. What should you do? Should you continue along the path where seven, eight, nine people across the street will be killed? Or if you're able to maneuver the car in another way, another individual's life will be taken, but that individual was an innocent bystander, and he had nothing, he had his life ahead of him, and he was not in any difficult situation. So explain to Tzitz Eliezer, it's not just a theoretical application, but there are very many practical applications that emerge from the Chazon Ish's theoretical. Number one was the grenade, and here is the runaway train, if you want to call it that, or the car that's really headed out. And the Tzitz Eliezer is also quite unequivocal here in his understanding of what the appropriate halachic protocol is, and he explains that shame al kasa adit, better to do nothing than to do something. And he explains that because of the difficulty in the decision as to whether or not, like the Chazon Ish said, is it a maisa hariga or is it a maisa hatzala, the Tzitz Eliezer is not convinced by the Chazon Ish that it's just an act of saving, but maybe it is also an act of killing, similar to sources 13 and 14. The Tzitz Eliezer raises his hands and he says, shame al kasa adit, better not to do anything. Allow the trolley to go on its way, like the utilitarian position that we quoted originally, and he understands that it might be similar enough, it might be closely related to sources 14 and 15, the case of Mari Duroy or the case of Tanu, that one is should not put the trolley or move the lever in a different direction, one should not jerk the car in a different direction, but allow the car, the train, the trolley, the arrow, the grenade to go along their way, and that it shouldn't be moved. He says for the in the second paragraph, six or seven lines down, to go to kli rechev, a car, kishinosim b'dome l'mashal miklad b'tamit, the car has a sudden problem and is about to go into anashim rabin, many people, shechot tzines ha'chish, who are crossing the street, v'yesh lasus atzir p'tamit, I'm able to make a short stop, al v'dei nesigah horit, my car will go in reverse, k'dei shirabin ha'ovim moli harim, the many will not be killed. When I put the car into the backward or the reverse, it's clear that person behind me is going to be killed. The name of the Chol Hadom was then. And he writes, the question that you brought to my attention is regarding this situation. What should you do? If I do nothing, I'll pass it, the five, six individuals will be killed. Or to proactively move my car in a different direction and one individual will be killed. Says the Tzitz Eliezer like that. Hey, it seems to me he knows that the shame on passive, better to be passive. And he explains that the reason for passivity in this situation is because it could be similar enough to act. actively or proactively killing somebody, and as such, passivity, like the totalitarian view in the world of Sif Taliyeter, is what is appropriate. The final source is source number 18, in his most recent volume, Rabbi Gleichner's Contemporary Halakhic Problems, also writes that he feels that the Sif Taliyeter is the appropriate halakhic objective. It seems to this writer that deflection of a lethal weapon constitutes a direct rather than an indirect act. So like the suffix, the doubt of the Chazon Ish as to whether or not it is actively killing or if it's really saving somebody else, so the Rabbi Gleich understands, like the Sif Taliyeter, who he himself quotes, and he also quotes Rabbi Yamin Rabin Tzunim, he was one of the late authors of Encyclopedia of Ideas. Both of them address the Chazon Ish's hypothetical and conclude that passive non-intervention is the only acceptable mode of conduct. So we do emerge with two different ways to understand triage. Triage in life-saving and triage in killing. When it comes to triage and life-saving, so there where the opportunity exists to save somebody, we are very active and we try to figure out whose life can be saved long-term. That's like the Moshe Feinstein, like the Sif Taliyeter, whoever has long-term life expectancy, that is what we're looking at. The case in source number 9, in terms of the list of priorities of the Mishnah, is dealt with when all things are equal in a vacuum. When two people are drowning, you only save one of them, you will revert back to the Mishnah and the Sakas Horios. But when there are other applications to take into account, long-term survival, that will always trump the list of priorities listed in the Mishnah and the Sakas Horios, and we try to figure out who has long-term life expectancy is greater, and as such to survive. But it seems to be the conclusion, and the majority of halakhic authorities, when we deal with the trolley problem, seem to take the approach that passivity is the way to go, because the halakhic sources seem to indicate that handing somebody's life over to be killed is equivalent to killing them, and when it comes to the situation of the trolley problem, moving the lever in a different direction is similar or similar enough to the Mishnah of the Seches Trumos and to the Gemara of the Seches Sanhedrin that it's called killing or active killing, and as such we prefer that the five lives which are headed toward death should be taken as opposed to moving it in the other direction. Yes, I'll take questions.
What happens if someone volunteers?
It's a good question. What's your case?
Okay, all the cases. If the person who's driving the car, you're saying five people want to, let's say they go over the bridge. They direct the car to go over the bridge, so they, you know, they kill themselves in a way, to sacrifice themselves for others.
Right. So
the someone with the water, you take the water, I volunteer myself to be killed.
So in the first lecture, we discussed that exact case. And there is room, and Chazon Ish refers to it, that there are cases, there's a situation in Rambam Bavas, Blumenus and Pupus. They understood that their empowered Tyne, Avud, is going to be killed as a result of the death of the young princess, the Roman princess, and until they were able to decide whose life who was responsible for that death, they were going to kill the entire town. Blumenus and Pupus, they, on their own volition, said, we did it, even though they didn't, because they understood that regardless, everybody's going to be killed, and as such, a volunteer act. Or what I refer to as less, we're falling on the domain, there is certainly a lot of propriety for that.
The case of the trolley is a set-up case, but the case of the car, we don't know the vadai that all of them will die, or these will die. If you go up to the side and hit one person, that will die. It's two spekos here.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you decide there?
I think that's the reason that many of the postings are more comfortable in terms of Sheva al Pasa. Because it's so difficult to know what the outcome is going to be, that's why the halakhic ruling of Sheva al Pasa Adif is always seems to be, in this situation particularly, to take the better of the two.
I would think it's a reason to go to the lesser.
I understand. Yeah.
When everything is equal, in the case of who you should save, does it make a difference if a person is a relative to say maybe Sarkhal Tisalem?
Yeah, there are those who do suggest that. It's a minority opinion, but there are those, just like in Hilchos Kafka, where the rule is if you can save, or if you have enough money to save two people, one of them is your brother, your father, your mother, your sister, your brother, you should save them first. There are those who do suggest. Very few, but if you're two people are driving, one is your sister, one is your neighbor, there are those who do raise that as a possibility.